Hey everyone, Sean and Dave here from Saturday Morning Cartoons. We cannot start this week's show, absolutely cannot start this week's show, until we thank the following people who went to patreon.com to sponsor this show.
Derek Haynes.
Alex Kazanis.
Jack Connolly.
Jonathan Renteria Elie.
Bill Dixon.
The wonderful Melanie Harker.
Dr. Jason Woods.
Oh, the fantastic Allison Keane.
The alright Jamal Newman.
The so-so John Helter.
Battle Mat Fitness.
The wonderful David Trumbore.
And the one and only Sean Paul Ellis. Hey, out there, if you guys want to be on this list or just want to know what's coming up next week on the show, check out patreon.com/Saturday Morning Cartoons for more details. And remember, that's morning with a U.
Thank you so much for sponsoring us. Thank you so much for listening. And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. Coming to you from Saskatchewan for some reason, I'll be your co-host, Dave Trumbore. Joining me as always, they call him Mr. Pig, my co-host, Sean Paul Ellis. How's it going, bud?
David, buddy. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I had nothing to tie into that quote about you being called Mr. Pig. Wasn't okay. A burn on you. Wasn't trying to redefine your nature or anything.
I took it as a personal slight, and I'm happy about it. So
100%
let's...
was not. Just wanted to get that line in because it's one of my favorites.
I 100% took it as a personal slight against me, my character, and myself. Look,
but moving on from your personal feelings, speaking of personal favorites, what are some other personal favorites of our little show here today?
Oh my God! So we have to give a couple shout outs very early in the show. And we want to let everybody know that we really appreciate these people for dropping us an email. The amount of information and content from these two people is staggering and fantastic. So Shannon messaged us after our All Grown Up episode with some just crazy insight into what the show is, not to mention a ton of recommendations. And so we can't wait to actually go back and dig into those now with her insight. So thank you, Shannon. We appreciate that. And then also our listener, William. William, digging through our back catalog, doing a great job of giving us a complete stream of consciousness for how much he hates some of my opinions about things. So I love it every day.
I personally love it as well. It makes me feel much better about what my side of things are. So thank you, William. I love this, though, because this is the whole reason that we started this show up. It's not just so that Sean and I can keep in touch and talk about crazy cartoons and stuff. We want to talk to people out there who have this passion about cartoons or just love going back and revisiting some of these like nostalgic titles, nostalgic moments, or even going back to visit some of this stuff and see if it holds up, or if not, how catastrophically it all falls apart 20 years later or more. So thank you guys so much for reaching out. We really do love and appreciate getting your messages. Yeah, bud.
One of the whole reasons that we had the idea to do cartoons for this show was because in the mid-2000s, when Voltron came out on DVD, I had loved Voltron growing up, and then when they had these DVDs out, I had to get my hands on them, and I Netflixed them. This is when I could still get DVDs through Netflix. Mm-hmm. I got them, and I watched probably the first disc, and there was so much reused and recycled animation, and it became disheartening for me to watch. And so we've coined this term the Voltron effect, which is where you have...
We haven't used it in a while.
Haven't used it in a long time. Neither have we used Rule 34 in a long time.
I was just thinking that, yeah. Because I actually recently looked up some of the stuff that we've talked about, Rule 34, and then I remembered why we stopped doing it.
Yeah, no. That's
because of nightmares and psychological trauma that I have to pay to get rid of. I can't afford it.
So that Voltron effect, that is that thing when you have that anchor of nostalgia of something that you love so much, and you rewatch it, and it shatters you as a human being to the point where you have to wonder, why did I watch this? So it happens, but it's fine, and we get a chance to talk about it. So we can all agree to disagree and agree that I'm right.
Perfect. But I agree with William. That sounds
totally
wrong.
Well,
I love Cops.
Cops. Man, tonight...
This is great.
It's
like three throwbacks to the early days, like the pre-episode 100 days. I love it.
Hey, if you were thinking, I wonder if they're going to quibble and complain over some things tonight. Guess what? We are. We are in our second week of Disney Madness.
Yeah.
If this is your first time listening to us, every March we do our own bracket that we have that's set up. And so we've done Pocket Monsters in the past. We've done Mecca in the past. This month, we are dedicating it to Disney cartoons that are available.
That was probably a poor decision, as these usually turn out to be. And honestly, last week was okay. We had Goof Troop, and then we had Bonkers, which I love going back and visiting these things, because sometimes there's a cartoon that maybe you didn't give a chance, or maybe you only watched a little bit of it and missed some of the like the more subtle points or some interesting things. There were some surprises in Bonkers to be found, but I think if you go back and listen to it, you'll kind of see how we came down on that one. This week, I was not looking forward to it, but we will see how this experience turned out. What are we talking about tonight? Who's going head to head here?
Oh man, this week, this is our second round of seeds. We have Quack Pack versus Timon and Pumbaa.
How about that? That's exactly why I was not looking forward to this one.
Oh, really?
These both sounded just like cash grabs, or like just some thinly veiled attempt to like capitalize on some already popular franchises. Quack Pack, I had no clue what this was. I was actually thinking it was Drac Pack, the horror-themed cartoon from, the 70s, I think. So I honestly had little to no idea what I was getting into with Quack Pack, and Timon and Pumbaa just seemed obvious, but also I had never watched this spinoff. So for me, I was just like, I don't know what I'm getting into. What about you? Did you have any prior knowledge going into this?
I knew that Quack Pack existed. I don't think that I'd ever watched it, and I think there's a good reason why. and then with Timon and Pumbaa, I definitely know that I had watched this once or twice. I think that I after that once or twice, I probably avoided kind of going back and watching it again. I don't know. I kind of surprised myself with being able to watch it this evening.
What's funny is the only episode of Quack Pack I think I ever saw was the one we actually watched tonight. Because as soon as I saw a couple of the characters, I was like, yes, I 100% remember this. So that was kind of good, I think, for me. I had a bit of a touchstone. But for people out there who don't know what we're even talking about with either of these cartoons, we're going to give you a little bit of background on this. So, Sean, what's the history of Quack Pack?
So, Quack Pack is an American animated sitcom television series produced by Walt Disney Television Animation, featuring Donald Duck and his nephews. The show debuted in September of 1996 as a part of the Disney Afternoon programming block, following the major success of Goof Troop. The series ran for one season with 39 episodes.
Didn't even hit that 65. We are now like out of the time period where it was just like every cartoon, no matter how shitty, always hit 65 episodes just so they could hit that syndication mark and get their money back, basically. Now we're starting to like count pennies and be like, you know what? 39's good. I think we're good.
Well, I mean, could you imagine for Quack Pack? So a lot of that road to 65 for some of these cartoons were them just splicing together earlier episodes to try to recreate and make a hybrid new story. I mean, they were really squeezing blood from a stone at that point, just trying to get to that syndication number of 65. I could not imagine that happening in Quack Pack without dire consequences.
I could see him putting together like a best of clip show, like the kids all. Let me tell you what this is about first, and then this will make more sense. But I could see them sitting around with Uncle Donald and like going through a photo album of like their best hits for like a two-part episode where they literally just splice together the previous 62 episodes into like little clips or something. But if you don't know what we're talking about and you're thinking, aren't they talking about DuckTales? No. Here's what's going on with Quack Pack. The show centers around Donald and preteen versions of his nephews Huey, Dewey, and Louie. In this series, Donald works as a cameraman alongside Daisy, who is a reporter. The group travel around the world looking for a big scoop. That's kind of the premise of what's going on here. Huey, Dewey, and Louie have more distinctive personalities, and they usually resort to extreme and strange measures to avoid getting into trouble with their uncle and to achieve their ambitions. This is a very 90s take on the DuckTales kids.
This was 100% a 90s take. And when we get into the actual details and plot about this, I was thinking about this earlier today. This is a poor man's DuckTales. This is a 5 and below DuckTales. This is a 99-cent store DuckTales that we watched tonight.
There's some interesting attempts and ideas here, and we'll definitely get into that. And then as far as the execution goes, we'll see how far that goes.
This is Michael Keaton in the movie Multiplicity, and it's like 7 clones down, and then
four or whatever his name was.
Right. This is between 4 and 7 clones down. DuckTales.
Yikes. Yeah. I don't even know what kind of creature that looks like at this
point. I want you to use your imagination, because 4 was enough, but let's just say you get any crazier than that.
We're going to eat a dolphin. I'm just going to quote Multiplicity the rest of the night. But while I do that, Sean's going to tell you a little bit of the background on Timon and Pumbaa.
The Lion King's Timon and Pumbaa, often simply referred to as Timon and Pumbaa.
Can we just call it TNP tonight?
Can we call it TNP? I'm good with that. TNP. TNP is an American animated television series created by, again, Walt Disney Television Animation.
Which, guess what? Makes sense during Disney Madness Month. I don't know why I keep putting that in the notes.
The show ran for 3 seasons on CBS Disney Channel, Toon Disney, and in syndication as a part of the Disney Afternoon. It aired in September of 1995 to September of 1999, and is also the first Lion King-related media to show humans, as humans were not present in the movie. So that's fun.
Yeah.
It is the... is it?
Trivia.
Ooh, it's trivia. It is the first of 2 television series based on the film, the second being The Lion Guard.
We gotta watch Lion Guard at some point.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah.
So if I am unfamiliar with TNP, let's say I know TNP from the movie,
sure,
but I have no idea, again, how they can make this cash grab with TNP. How would you summarize this, Dave?
Okay, I would say that TNP centers on, obviously, Timon, the meerkat, Pumbaa, the warthog, you can call him Mr. Pig, as they live their problem-free philosophy, Hakuna Matata. And if that song is already in your head, guess what? You're ahead of the game. We'll explain why in just a few moments. But this series is set after the events of the original film, and it involves the characters having misadventures in the jungles of Africa, as well as across the globe in various settings for some reason, such as Canada, Britain, the United States, and, of course, Spain, because why not? While the show focuses primarily on Timon and Pumbaa, it does feature episodes centering respectively on Rafiki, in the episode Rafiki Fables, and also the hyena trio of Shenzi, Banzai, and Ed, called the Laughing Hyenas. There's also 2 episodes centering on Zazu, who was one of my personal favorites, and I feel he's underrated as a Major Dodo.
I agree.
Or whatever his name was. Major Domo, Major Dodo, I think that's the pun. Moving on.
So, before we get into this, let's set some quick ground rules about what we're doing. So for Quack Pack, as well as also TNP, we've watched the first episode of the series, as we will continue to do for everything that we watch over March Disney Madness this month. So, as you might be aware, pilots can sometimes be a little bit challenging and can be a little bit tough. And so we're trying to set everybody on the same equal playing field when we're going into this.
It sounded like you said we are trying to upset everyone on the same equal playing field. And I just nodded in agreement.
Let me just say this. Let me just re-clarify that, Dave. We are trying and we are going to upset everybody over the course of 5 weeks.
Oh, God, is this a 5-week month?
Is this a 5-weeker?
Why did we do it? I don't know. Sorry, everyone.
I don't know how calendars work. This will be fun. So we are grading everything. We have 5 categories that we are going through: theme song, animation style, characters, plot. And if you've listened before, those are the same 4 standard ones that you're used to. The special category that we've added in is called How Disney. And so this is ultra subjective to you, the listener, as well as us, the reviewers, because it's just how you feel this fits into the Disney universe. If this was something that you really enjoyed, if it brought up good feelings and emotions, also converse feelings and emotions that are good. So
also Nike feelings and emotions.
Yeah, also Asics feelings, Adidas. Reebok. All day I dream about Simba.
Oh,
oh
no!
Did
Simba
it.
Is nowhere to be seen.
Which is a real bummer. So we have How Disney is our 5th category. We're scoring everything on a scale from 1, which means we absolutely do not like it, to 10, which means it's the best thing. Feel free to score along and share your scores with us.
Also keep in mind that we do have to give it at least a 1, because sometimes you'll want to give a thing a 0, but you can't. Oh. Spoiler alert, maybe that happens on this episode. We'll find out. Guess what, though? The dip rules still apply. If we absolutely hate a show and want to wipe it out of all existence and from all time, we can still apply the dip rule. So keep that in mind. All right, we want to start off with Quack Pack theme song tonight?
Let's get into Quack Pack theme song.
Oh, boy, let's do it, I guess. What jumps out at you?
This is a weird hybrid
of
an intro. Because we were given, the idea is that Donald is sitting down in front of a television to be able to watch some of his old Disney cartoons. and the his nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, are kind of shoving the television out of the way because they've got new, hip, extreme cartoons that they want to watch that are pertinent and interesting to them. And so they're shoving out all this old garbage because they need to bring in this new coolness that's sponsored by Cool Ranch Doritos. And so it just, I watched this and I had to break this apart into many different pieces. The song itself is really high energy. The music itself is very high energy.
Sure.
I kind of enjoyed that. That was kind of fun.
What's the background song though? Because it has like a beat that's like super original. What's it from?
I couldn't figure that one out.
It feels like something that was like from Greece or it feels like the Hand Jive or something, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know if I enunciated that well enough. Hand Jive.
Job.
Okay. Nah, damn it.
What?
From Greece.
Yeah, from Greece. I love that part in Greece. So they had all of these things that were going on. Music was really fun. I'd say the lyrics for the song are, again, just almost unlistenable. I feel like quacking and I think I will. Gonna quack, quack, quack till I catch my thrill. I don't know. You know, maybe it was the part where they go, in da 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 duck days, let's quack. And I was like, fuck. I'm having a hard time with this.
Yeah.
The visuals though are interesting, but it left me asking the question, who's the antagonist and who's the protagonist between uncle and nephews? I really don't know. Even after watching this episode, I still really don't know.
I think that's one of the more interesting questions for the show, actually, because I think it really depends on your age range. And us being Donald's age more now than the kids, I think I had a very different perspective on this, which was interesting to me.
I think I do, too.
Yeah.
I will say the one sweet spot, that in addition to just sort of the fun, energetic music that they have, is that this prominently features the nephews in such 80s fashion that I couldn't look away. I kept looking at them and thinking to myself, like, oh, fuck, did I really dress like that back in that? Probably.
Yeah, we all did, actually.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hard.
Hairstyle, too. I'm pretty much lined up with you on this one. I hated the Bonkers theme song last night. That thing literally drove me away from watching the show. This one wasn't quite as bad, but it's pretty damn close. The lyrics are just horrendous. You can't use quacking as an adjective. It doesn't make any sense. I don't care if this is a cartoon. That pissed me off for no reason. That just pissed me off. Rubbed me the wrong way. But the saving grace, I do like the idea of showing Donald and the teenage or preteen nephews kind of at odds. And I like the idea of shifting from the sort of early 90s and 80s DuckTales aesthetic with Donald and kind of like the 80s technology and all the old stuff to showing that no, this is a new, hip, fresh 90s extreme take. Even if now that feels really like dated and jaded and corny. At the time, it was like, oh, that's cool. They're shifting into like the current modern era. I like that idea, and I like that came across visually with both the redesign of the nephews, the sort of back and forth between Donald and the nephews, and that kind of tug of war that went on through the whole intro. I thought that was fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, sometimes you just feel like quacking, Dave.
Got the quacking fever, got the quacking craze.
Oof.
I hope you guys got paid a lot for coming up with the same song. In the 30 seconds it took you to put it together. However, still not as bad as what we're going to talk about in a minute here. But what do you score the theme song intro for Quack Pack?
For Quack Pack, I give this a 6.
I gave it a 5.
Give it, okay. All right.
Because it's like, as a song and as lyrics, it's dog shit. But the visuals were interesting. I thought they did okay with that. So it's serviceable. It's serviceable. It's fine. Let's move on down to Timon and Pumbaa, though.
Okay.
Can I start with this one?
Go ahead.
This is about as lazy as you can get when it comes to theme songs. Here's what they did. They took Hakuna Matata and they added the words Timon and Pumbaa. And that's it. And the rest of it, the visuals are a clip show. That's it. There's a little bit of new animation with Timon and Pumbaa like mugging for the camera and introducing and singing just to remind you who they are. But that's it, man. They took one of the most popular songs from the movie and just jammed it into the front of this thing. I absolutely hated it. I love the song, and I love the song in the movie. I hated that they used it for this.
Really? Okay, so I had the complete opposite reaction to this.
We'll balance each other out, I guess.
Oh, no. I love the song. I love all the music from Lion King.
Sure.
When I put this on in the kitchen, fiance and special friend of the show, Melanie Harker. She began singing this. I began singing this. We started listening to Just Can't Wait to Be King. This brought up so many good memories.
Sure.
Yeah, it 100% is them, you know, introducing you, reintroducing these characters. But I also love that this is how they were introduced in the movie itself.
Yeah,
is through this song. And so having those memories of being reintroduced, I'm glad that they chose this song. It's a hybrid. Again, it's another hybrid where you have some dedicated dedicated animation that they use to set up sort of the beginning of the song,
right,
for Hakuna Matata. But then it just goes to all these clips things, and then it kind of bookends with Pumbaa shaking his butt in front of the camera for everybody, and Timon kind of flipping around,
which I'm concerned about.
No, that's actually that's a real thing. So if you ever look at Disney animals in movies, they do not have buttholes.
They just eat until they burst.
I presumably.
Those are the most efficient creations ever seen.
Do me a favor. Yeah. Watch any Disney animated series or movie that's
with
out
buttholes.
There,
got it.
Any animal where you can see a butthole on something, there is no butthole whatsoever.
There's one giant butthole in a Disney production, and it's called Star Wars: The Force Awakens. And
know
what I'm talking about, look for Spencer Perry, or maybe the Spencer Perry on Twitter. He's obsessed with the giant space pig's butthole scene in The Force Awakens. And you got a new best friend. There you go.
Oh, okay.
It's the only Disney butthole to be seen.
I guess, you know, there has to be an exception to the rule, and so we got one Disney b-hole.
You can find Disney princess buttholes, but they're on rule 34 pages.
What?
And we don't want to talk about that.
Jesus Christ.
Redacted.
Oh, man. All right, so I love this.
If
Dave,
I just say
you...
redacted, that automatically moves it from the podcast, right?
Yeah. You could just, I'll edit this out. Wink.
Cool. I don't know why you said wink and also wink, but we're good.
I don't know. That's weird. So what did you score this, Dave?
One. It's literally, for me, it's as lazy an approach to a theme song as you can get. Look, if you wanted to bring the spirit of Hakuna Matata, you could have the sound of it and even have a little bit of the flavor of it, but have a new fucking theme song. Don't just play Hakuna. Look, if Sight Unseen, I played for you and special friend Mel this theme song for the first 48 seconds, you'd be like, oh, Hakuna Matata, you'd just be singing it. And then all of a sudden, they'd be like, come on and Pumbaa. And you'd be like, wait, what the fuck? And you would feel violated. You would feel physically, emotionally, and psychologically violated.
I guess I didn't feel violated. I felt
but
excited
you knew
and energized.
Going into it what this
yeah, but
was,
I felt
though.
I felt excited and energized after having listened to this. And so I gave it a 10.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Well, it averages out to a 5.5, so I'm okay.
I mean, this was really one of those things where the second it came on, I got excited. I began singing other songs from Lion King. I had a lot
thing.
Of fun with
that's
it.
What
it was
drives
a great
me nuts about
way to
it.
Revisit
it's,
it.
It's an advertisement. It's a commercial for watching The Lion King again, which is super smart when it comes to being like,
sure.
We got a new cartoon show. Here's a thing you liked. Here's not the show you're expecting, but you're still thinking of the movie. To me, it was just the laziest possible approach.
All right.
That's it. We're done with this episode.
This is the ridiculous wink. Unbelievable that this is, we've gone a week and a half, into our second episode of March.
Week point two, I think.
Yeah, and we are now at the point where we've finally, this is the first disagreement. We've been pretty on the same page for everything else.
Yeah.
This is the first one.
Pretty good for 22% of the month.
Yeah right?
Yikes.
Excited.
All
right. Excited to see how the rest of this goes.
Back to Quack Pack now. Play
Got
along
it.
At home. We're going to talk animation style. So this involves everything from backgrounds, fluidity of animation, character design, things like that. So what's good, Quack Pack?
You know, it was interesting. This was very Goof Troop style animation.
Yeah.
You know, they do a good job of reintroducing some classic characters such as Donald and Daisy. We have sort of these new redesigns for the nephews, which, you know, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that I saw in maybe some of the transition between their cool duck quaff that they had that was on top of their head. Yeah, there was that.
Bedhead.
There was some weird jank every once in a while in terms of some
weird jank in the 90s.
Fair enough.
Some people had jank in their hair.
There was some weird jank that was in the animation for this. And not to mention, for some reason, I found it really off-putting that they continued to have, like, the nephews, like, their, like, brows were furrowed, like, so often they were just like, oh, like, which to me indicates whenever you would look at a character like that, or when they would, like, that would mean that they're the antagonist. Like, they're angry, they're mean, they have, like, furrowed brows, because trust me, as we talk about in the plot, these nephews are not thinking about anything. It's not like they're, like, deep in the middle of, you know, trying to figure out where they fit in the world and understanding, like, bigger life goals, as we mentioned sort of in the synopsis for that. That's not fucking happening in this show at all, ever. It really just kind of seemed like they were sort of just pissed off preteens the entire time, and that kind of pulled it down a little for me.
Interesting. For me, I liked it because I had that classic kind of DuckTales look that you could instantly recognize exactly who these characters were, but it had sort of a modern update to help differentiate them a little bit. So Gone were just like the same colored t-shirts and baseball hats, and these kids had like baggy jeans or baggy shorts. And
tank top
or like a coat thrown over it or a sweatshirt or whatever. They were still the same color theme to them, but they you could tell them apart, not just from the color. You know, they weren't identical triplets, and then from the color of their clothes, you could tell them apart. They actually had, like, different styles to them. I particularly like this episode because our main characters get an actual, like, design change. We'll talk about it in the plot, but something happens to them that physically transform and changes them, and it sort of gives an idea of what each of their personality traits has the most, like, focus, which ones are focused on certain things, whether they're brainy or whether they're more action oriented or whether they act before they think, things like that. That I thought was really cool. Additionally, there were a couple things in this particular episode that were interesting in terms of animation. There's some crazy sequences that take them from just sort of like the street level action to literally into space. Which was cool. I thought it was cool because it was like a nod to sort of like a Justice League. We'll get into the superheroics of this episode, but it was kind of like a nod to Justice League, the comics and the cartoons at the same time. And then there was like a crazy space battle that was sort of, I don't want to say futuristic, but it was like the scale of it was so massive that it was like celestial, right? So it was sort of like revisiting the Marvel comics where like there's the celestial battles and they're just like knocking planets around and like moving stars and like it's that
like Galactus is gonna show up at any point in time and just that, start chomping on planets,
start chewing on it, like that chewing. Sort of scale. And I thought that was really neat. That was something different that we hadn't seen in DuckTales for obvious reasons. It gets into the surreal and kind of like the completely abstract and insane, but it was fun. And then real quick, there's one quick cut. We talk about this a lot, where they kind of do like a still frame on a hyper realistic picture or a hyper detailed thing where you get to see a lot of nooks and crannies, and it's usually used for something gross. It's usually something disgusting, something super gross that you just kind of like, you have to focus on it for a second and it grosses you out. They do that with a kind of moldy old piece of pizza in this thing that I thought was cute. And then one more thing, they make a joke about Pluto in this, which obviously in the Disney verse, there's Pluto, the used to be a planet in the 90s, and there's also Pluto the dog. And they do a quick cut during this joke to the classic kind of cartoon version of Pluto the dog. I was like, that's cute. Like, it keeps the story going, but it also is a nod back to the original stuff. So I liked a lot of the things that they threw in here, and I like the redesigns overall. And, you know, it was fluid and it was fun. I thought it had a good energy and a good design to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So what'd you score this one?
Ooh, so I gave this, for animation style, I gave this a 7.
I gave a 7, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Back on track. Back on track.
See, we're good. Until we get to TNP.
Oh, boy.
What was it about this one? This was the category where I finally started to figure out what it was about this show that they were trying to do that I didn't particularly like.
This was interesting because I thought that this animation was a lot smoother than what we saw with Quack Pack tonight.
Really? Okay.
I thought that it was interesting because I thought that some of the colors for the characters tended to be slightly off. Like, I didn't think that Pumbaa was as red in this as he was in the actual movie itself. I thought that he was a little bit of a darker shade. You know, and I understand why they did this. This is a kid's show. They were punching this up. They were making this a little bit more. They were making this brighter. They were making this whole cartoon in the world in the jungle not as kind of scary as when Simba was first discovering it for the first time and stumbled upon two newfound friends.
Right.
He was like, this is a point where like they're kind of opening this up, and so it's a this bright kind of interesting world, similar to like maybe a Tasmania.
That's exactly what I wrote.
Yeah.
Yep.
So very, very similar in nature to that. So I thought it was fun. You know, it was okay. Like we don't really get any updates or any changes to these characters in general. It's just kind of a lot of more of the same.
Yeah. For me, the kind of the major downer was that it wasn't up to the quality of the feature, which for obvious reasons. I mean, it's not going to be. They never are. But.
So wait, I'm sorry. You're upset that it wasn't the same quality as the movie, but then when they used something from the movie in the show, you were like, ugh, I wish they hadn't used that thing that was of the same quality from the movie in the theme song.
I think they're super different.
I rest my case.
Nah, I think they're super different because the theme song is supposed to introduce you to the show and then kind of get you hooked to do that. And to use kind of like a pre-existing thing, it just seems lazy. It's good marketing, I guess. It just seems lazy. You know, to say that they didn't use, that they used some different kind of animation, that would be to like completely redesign them or paint them in like a completely different style, which they didn't. They were just subtle changes for the ease of, you know, cranking out however many episodes of this thing there were rather than just one feature film. So, I mean, it was a little, they were a little less, the animation was a little less clean. It was a little less details, a little less smooth, but it wasn't bad by any means. It was just different. Right. And you recognize that it was more cartoonish. What I thought was interesting, though, was that throughout the animation of this thing, there's a lot of throwbacks to classic Looney Tunes adventures and Looney Tunes episodes.
Yeah.
There are, like, they went out of their way to kind of recreate specific scenes in the jungle or with different characters or with different looks, like when Timon kind of looks at the camera in, like, a fourth wall breaking scene and kind of mugs for the camera a little bit. There are things designed specifically to mimic Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and the old kind of like Looney Tunes classic characters, which I thought was an interesting choice. We'll talk about that more than plot.
Yeah. It's weird to have that in a Disney
cartoon
where it's winking and it's nodding at
Warner Brothers
IP.
Yeah.
I think it's nice though because, you know, I have to imagine somewhere in my brain that the people who were writing and producing and drawing and putting all of this together had been so inspired by those WB classics.
Of course.
That it was something where it's sort of like a tip of the hat to them.
Of course. Yeah.
But
and these guys, I think, when they broke whatever their story was, whatever their angle was for this particular series, because what is this series going to be if it's not a Lion King story? Like, what's the angle? Is it going to be a gritty jungle
Timon
story?
And Pumbaa.
Right? Exactly. So the fact that they were like, oh, let's do a Looney Tunes kind of approach. That's why I think another reason it looks and feels similar to Tasmania.
Yeah.
It doesn't only look like it. It's got that similar kind of like aesthetic and tone to it. I will say one thing that I thought was interesting. It stood out to me in the second half of this first episode because they are two different stories in one half-hour run. They do play with some interesting perspectives and angles. There's a lot of stuff that happens kind of down on ground level and a lot of stuff that happens in like the treetops and up in the sky. They did a lot of cool kind of like low and high angle shots to change the perspective between Timon and something that he was after. So you don't see that too. You'll see it, especially you do see it in like Looney Tunes and stuff. But it was something that jumped out and was different and interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely noticeable
by
comparison to kind of what we saw with Quack Pack, maybe.
Right. Which was pretty,
Yeah, which was pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, so, for the most part, except for the scale changes when they did go to space for that, which I liked.
So what did you score this?
I give this one a 6.
I give this one a 7.
Okay, cool. So we're good. I say.
All right.
Character time, brah.
Character time.
What do you know about Quack Pack?
I mean, these are the characters that you know and love from DuckTales or from any of the original, you know, Disney cartoons, you know, with Donald and Daisy. And so, you know, we have Donald, we have Daisy, you know, they now have new roles and they now have new jobs. Great. Which kind of gives them the motivation or the drive to go off on some of these adventures, which we can talk about in the plot.
Yeah.
We have Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Great. I know who these characters are, but for some reason they're now like, oh, radical, like the entire time.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't mind it. I get why they're doing it, and I get the appeal of the audience, and you know, I'm sure that I knew that this was on, or I'm sure that this had been like, you know, I actually don't really remember watching this that much, and so like when we were talking about this just in general, I was worried that this was something that was going to be very weird, and it ended up being obviously much more easy to digest than what I was expecting. What was frustrating to me is that there's a character that I don't know if this character's been in something before or where he's come from, but Professor Ludwig just kind of gets dropped in here, and he is the most interesting person in the room, and nobody wants to fucking talk about him.
Nope, he bookends the episode, but that's about it. Ludwig von Drake.
And that is very frustrating for me, the viewer, because I'm like, this guy seems to have shit going on. Nobody else seems to have really much going on. But we have one person who's got crazy cool things. So, like, maybe we talk about that person. Nope. Okay, cool. Like, we're still talking about having to clean a room, huh? Great. 22 minutes of having to fucking clean a room. Awesome.
What's interesting to me is, like, I agree. Ludwig von Drake was a lot of fun for the few moments we got to spend with him. It's Donald's uncle, apparently, but I don't know that he shows up in DuckTales, the new DuckTales, any of that stuff. And, I mean, I guess every duck in the McDuck family line has to have, like, a weird mad scientist ally just, like, living in their basement or something, because it seems like Scrooge McDuck obviously had, like, Gyro Gearloose. And he was kind of on hand to provide inventions and stuff. I don't know why you don't just bring Gyro into the fold. Why not connect those two things? Because they all obviously know each other. So I don't know what the deal was with bringing in Ludwig von Drake, but I agree. He was a lot of fun as a new addition.
So it's interesting because, like, he's actually not a new addition. So okay. I did a little bit of research on him. So, like, he actually was originally introduced in 1961 as a part of The Wonderful World of Color when it came on television. And he's sort of like he was that duck, if you ever remember, who was like back behind a television set and kind of like pulling wires and cables and trying to figure out some of the things. And so, you know, we've been talking about sort of the duck refresh that we get for these characters. They really give Ludwig von Drake like a crazy mad scientist persona.
Oh, yeah.
Where I want to say Albert Einstein. Right. And I want to say, though, that like the earlier, maybe like 60s and 60s introduction that you have is sort of like a scholarly gentleman or sort of an educator persona. And now they're just like, no, fuck it. Make it weird.
I do remember him now. As soon as you said that, I was just like, oh, I do remember him. That's pretty cool. Yeah. 100% remember him. If you guys look him up, like the classic version of him, I think you'll remember his kind of like lecture hall aesthetic. I wonder if they'll bring him into the rebooted one. We'll have to ask Kate Micucci.
If Aviv ever gets his text message back.
If they ever get out of IKEA.
for me, if you're not familiar with what the hell we're talking about, listen to our Scooby-Doo episode from 2 weeks ago.
It'll make slightly more sense.
A little bit more sense.
For me, though, the characters, I like Donald again. He's never really been one of my favorites. He's a little irritating to me. But I like that he kind of got an upgrade in this one. That was fine. Daisy was fine for the brief appearance that she had in this. I like, here's where I kind of like start to separate out on Quack Pack. I like the idea of having older versions of the triplets, kind of the angsty, preteen, teenage kind of little jerk duck kids. But I hate the triplets themselves. I don't think I ever really related with them, even as a kid, because I was just like, no, like if my parents tell me to do something, I'm probably going to do it. So like, I don't like these kids. These are the jerk kids that like never do what they're told and always get away with it.
Whoa. Yeah,
so I was always kind of like, no, I don't like these kids. And I'm still kind of the same. So now I'm more just on like on Uncle Donald's side, I think. So while I like the idea of it, the execution for me was just like, this isn't my thing.
All right. Yeah. Let's get the scoring. What'd you give this?
I give it a 6.
I give it a 6 too.
Okay, cool.
Oh!
So we're good.
Solid.
We're good
until
we get to this mess of TNP.
Oh, we got this TNP. This TNP, I would say this is really easy. Yeah, because it really is TNP, and we have a couple characters. We can talk about these tribe people, which is relevant to the plot later on, and sort of the reveal with that, which I was not comfortable with.
Nope.
And we have two squirrel characters that show up in the second half of the episode. One is a female, one is a male. Mm-hmm. The male is, I guess, French Canadian, and he's a flying squirrel. and the other female squirrel, she is thick. Like she is. Yeah. THICC thick. It is just it's an interesting watch to see how all of that goes, because it's one of those things where, again, like we've had criticism where Disney flaunts sexuality or puts innuendo or suggestive material in. And I'm not going to doubt any of it. In fact, I'm one of those people who the second I heard about it and I finally got to college and I could like Google these things and find them online, I was like, I want to look this shit up. Like, yeah. I got to figure this crap out. Like, I think it's interesting. I think it's very interesting to see how those were influenced and like put, you know, into shit that I watched as a child, but I didn't fucking know it. So, but in this is super simple. No buttholes. Nobody has any buttholes unless it's Star Wars, which kind of makes a little bit more sense when you think about it. Just think about it. Just think about it. All right. So we have Timon and Pumbaa in this, and that's really it. It is the meerkat and the warthog that you're just like, yeah, we know what these guys look like. Great. Done.
Yeah. And for me, that was kind of the problem, because it's like you've got a chance to reinvent kind of everything. Like, look at Goof Troop. Goof Troop brought Goofy and Pete, and then it brought a whole new family aspect to the whole thing. So Goofy and Max were a family unit, and then Pete and his entire family were a whole other unit, and they came together, and that was the whole crux of the show. In this, you've got Timon and Pumbaa together, but it doesn't mean that they have to live in isolation. I mean, it's weird that the only people they seem to run into are like antagonists or means to an end that they happen to have, at least in this early episode. So,
or like people to manipulate into getting them to do their work.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
means to an end to get whatever they want, whether it works out that way or not. So it's even like, look at Tasmania. Like, the Tasmanian Devil was always just kind of a one-off wacky antagonistic character, like Yosemite Sam.
Right.
But they folded him in well to Tiny Toons as a younger version of himself, or the son, I guess.
Yeah.
Of Taz. And then in Tasmania, they built an entire family unit kind of around him as well, and a bunch of other wacky characters that they all introduce in the theme song. Timon and Pumbaa, they didn't even have a bunch of grubs, really. They had like one or two beetles scattered around. And that's about it. It just felt like such an empty world.
I will say this, though, that it's like, it's exactly what you would think of like a Lion King grub or a beetle.
True.
Or that's it. Yeah, so I mean, like, you know, they concentrated on, you know, a couple things. I think that you're right. They didn't really flesh out this environment as much as they could, which is kind of a bummer.
That's why for me, like, if you just wanted TNP and you wanted more of their antics together, you'll like this. But otherwise, there's nothing new that they bring to the table.
Right. All right.
That's why I gave it a 5.
Oh, okay. I gave it a 5 as well, but hear me out.
Yeah.
Because that female squirrel was so thick, I gave it a 6.
Damn. Yeah. Yep. We'll talk more about them, because I was trying to figure out exactly what those squirrels were all about. They're like a weird amalgamation of, I think, maybe 3 different characters from like classic cartoons.
Okay.
We'll get there in a second. But before we do, we got to go back to the plot of Der Quack Pack.
Quack Pack.
I think we're going to split on this one too.
What are the
high points here? Yeah, I think so. Because for me, the only reason I remember this one, because give me the high points of the plot.
Sure. Nephews don't want to do any of the chores. They don't want to clean up their room.
Right.
They become superheroes in order to prevent having to do any responsibility. And then Donald decides that he's going to get them to do this by becoming essentially like a supervillain to combat them. And as a result, they have to battle with him until there's like a huge Deus Ex Machina at the very end. And it wraps up the episode without any problems whatsoever, which was frustrating.
Fair enough. Yep. Some of the finer points. So they get to transform into superheroes by the use of Ludwig von Drake's machinery. They basically go to him whenever they have a problem, and he has some sort of doohickey that'll solve it. What I thought was really funny was he rattles off a bunch of like machines and inventions that he has. One of them is a superhero machine, which is like a giant easy bake oven that you can go into and then pop out as a superhero. It's weirdly got a switch that goes all the way to like super, you know, lawful good superhero, all the way down to like rotten to the core supervillain for whatever reason, obviously to serve the plot. But he's also got a subatomic room cleaner,
right,
as one of his inventions. But the kids gloss right over that because they're obsessed with comic books right now, and they just like, no, we're gonna be superheroes. I love that they threw that in there, because it was just like such a cute nod to just be like, here's the thing that you need to do to clean your room. And they're just like, nah, we want nothing to do with any of that. Like, that's not what we're here for. We just want to be superheroes.
Well, not to mention at this point, he's like, I've never actually been able to get it to work. That and too. They look down and they're just like, oh, is it because it's unplugged? Yeah. Is it because you've never plugged this into a wall? And he's like, oh, Ludwig is just like, oh, yeah, that's probably the reason why. Probably. And so then these three kids sign up and volunteer for untested science.
Yeah, it's like super soldier serum.
Okay.
But it works. Yeah. And this is the only reason I remember this show is because they change Huey, Dewey, and Louie, who already had kind of a redesign. They drastically change them into like freakish versions of comic book superheroes. Oof. So Dewey pops out with a giant head, and he now calls himself Brain Boy, and he's got psychokinetic powers. Louie pops out as just like this massive muscle-bound duck kid, and he calls himself Captain Muscle. And when Huey pops out, they're like, he just changed his clothes. Like, I don't know what he's got. And he like randomly comes back with a kangaroo, and they're like, oh, he's Australian now. And for whatever reason, that just caught me off guard. I'm like, all right, that's very silly. But he's clearly like the speedster. They don't even give him a name. He just says, the really incredibly fast guy. That'll do until I think of a name. He never thinks of a name. But it was that redesign and that change that redefined the nephews that I was like, okay, cool. But now I remember this. This is probably the one episode that I watched when this was actually on the air.
Oh, because they turned from nephews into the T-Squad.
T-Squad. Oh, but I like this because it kind of pokes fun at the dynamic between Donald and the nephews. The whole time, right. It's just an antagonistic relationship of clean your room. We don't want to clean our room. And then it just amps it out to like ridiculous proportions. Like it ends up being a world-destroying, near-universe-destroying battle between the kids who don't want to clean their room and the adult who's telling them that they have to the point that both of them kind of get backed into separate corners. Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed that aspect when the battle finally left Earth.
Right.
But up until that point, it just really lingered on the idea of them fixing small problems that didn't mean or have anything to do or just like sight gags that they had with the narrator that was around every once in a while and them being called in by the IOUN to be able to do stuff. So I don't know. There was a lot that was in there, and some of it was interesting, and then other parts of it I was just like, ooh, you better be going somewhere with this. Like this better be increasing velocity towards something. And thankfully it does. But I'm still frustrated by the payoff for it.
See, for me, I liked it because the middle was kind of underbaked, but once they really got going, I thought it was a lot of fun. They poked a lot of fun at the Justice League with their sort of orbiting space station. They poked a lot of fun at like what superheroes do in the comics, which is responsible to like everything.
So we have like our own version of Flash. Yeah. We have our own version of Professor from
X,
Ultra.
If you want to call him that.
No, yeah, or like I'd say almost Brainiac. And then an even further reach that I have for that is that we've got our own version from Ultra Force of Prime. Sure. You know, and that's but we've got somebody who's a Flash. We've got somebody who's like a Professor X character, and we have somebody who's like a Superman, and. I don't know, like given the ability
and then you've
to
got Dr. Doom.
And then we've got a Dr. Doom, but like given the ability to give them any interesting superpower or do anything that they want to, it just kind of fell on some like really, I don't know, just tired tropes.
But I think that's what they were doing.
I think that's the point that they were trying to, but it just, I don't know. It didn't hit for me.
Okay. I mean, it worked for me. I thought the comic book stuff was fun. I thought like this is exactly what a trio of like self-centered little jerk kids would probably do if they had this power granted to them.
Yeah.
And then I love the escalation between them and the Duck of Doom with Donald Duck essentially becoming like the ultimate adult in charge. And basically everything he tries to do to lure them out of their space station and into battle or into cleaning their room, he like wreaks all kind of havoc. And then they're like, we don't care. We're just... whatever. And then they're like, oh, we'll respond to a pinball machine that's in tilt, which is stupid, but whatever. But then when he threatens to smash every TV in the world, then they're like, okay, we've got to stop this madness. This is too crazy. I thought it was fun. And then they take it to the absurd level where they like flee to the North Pole and Donald shows up as like a giant Santa Claus. And it just gets really fucking weird, man. To the point that they end up with the last structure standing in the universe, which is Ludwig von Drake's lab. And the kids are like beaten to the point that they're like, we'll do anything we have to do. I wish we could just clean our room and just reset this whole thing. That's basically what they do. He's like, oh, yeah. I can send you back in time and reset everything.
And I think that's to me what was frustrating. Like, okay. when it picked up velocity and when they are in orbit and when they are flying through the cosmos and they're having this battle, it's fun. It's interesting because, like, shit, I've never seen something like that. Yeah. That was really enjoyable. I loved the little, like, Pluto aside that they had at that point. Those things were super fun. But then they get to a point where they're just like, yeah, I feel like they hit that deus ex machina where they were just like, well, we could turn this superhero machine into a time machine that's going to bring you back to the moment right before you became a superhero.
Was it the same machine or just one of the other machines you had?
It was the same machine, dude.
Oh, was it really?
That's what I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's
a point.
That's when I was like, this is fucking, like, everything was great to that point. Like, they could have done something even lazier where it's like the kids all wake up and they're in their room and it was all a dream.
Well, and that's
or like
honest,
they go into the bathroom and Patrick Duffy comes out of the shower and you're like, this was a Dallas dream. And you're just like, oh, but they didn't. Like, it just.
But here's what it felt like for me, though. It felt like a bunch of kids being asked to clean their room. And then they were just like, we're just going to read our comics. And since we're like three brothers who all like comics and doing this, we're just going to like imagine that we are superheroes and don't have to clean our rooms instead. So they didn't go to the point where it's just like, oh, it was just like imagination fun play. But that's what it felt like to me. It felt like this could have been existing in their imaginations. And then at the end, they were just like, we should probably clean our rooms. I love the fact that like at one point they're like, we have one thing that we could use to save the day, but we can't find it because our room's a fucking shithole.
It was a cosmic defibrillator.
I think it was like an infundibulator or something.
Infidibulator or something like that. Yeah, something like that.
I thought it was cute. I thought it was fun. I love the idea of it being like the ultimate battle of wills between an adult and the kids who wouldn't clean their room. I like that.
So I'll agree and disagree with you on a couple of those points. Like the main one, the one probably being the most relevant, is that these were in these kids' minds the entire time. Like, this was something that they wanted to do. I mean, you know, we're introduced to them and they are laying in their room, like on top of like mountains of clothes, reading comic books, doing nothing. And they're bored. They don't have anything to do. They have all the time and everything in the world to be able to take advantage of and do. But they're bored. Like, we've heard this story a million times before. Then as superheroes, they're doing the exact same thing in a space station. And they're just like, we're bored. Yeah. Like they have all these powers now. They have all this ability again, all this potential. And they're just still bored. And so it's kind of why I feel like it's not something that's in their brain to be able to do. And
but
then I feel like everything.
That's also why these kids are little shits.
Yeah. But that's the challenging thing that we've kind of talked about and hinted at is who's the actual protagonist and who's the antagonist in this? Because like looking at this on a different angle, like, I don't know. I kind of feel like Donald was sort of the protagonist.
They
like,
each antagonize each other. Which doesn't really leave you with anybody to root for, which I was kind of like, I'm okay with that because it just lets you watch this kind of battle unfold.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm going to give it kind of like a week. Yeah.
Well, give it, what's the score you gave it out of 10?
I gave this a 5.
Holy shit. I gave it a 10 originally, but the fact that they had a kind of cop out at the ending, I knocked it a point. So I brought it down to 9. I really thought the idea was fun. I thought they executed it well, and I thought it was a great kind of first story to dip into to introduce this like newly rebooted characters. I had a lot of fun with it.
Okay.
Hated the characters, but I love the idea of the story.
Yeah, right.
Which is it was a very weird experience watching this because I was like, I enjoy this, just not the people who are in it.
So for TNP, we had one episode split into two parts. We had Bora Bora, and we had Saskatchewan.
Oh, wait, but how's Bora spelled?
But it's spelled like it's a boar.
Damn it. B-O-A-R-A.
No, like B-O-R-E.
I wish.
So we've got Bora Bora and we've got Saskatchewan Catch. If you were to give me Bora Bora highlights, what would you tell me?
I would say TNP are all set for a super cool beach vacation, even though their entire life is essentially a vacation. Pumbaa gets kidnapped by a trio of natives, super racist looking natives from like back in the day, Looney Tunes style. But due to some miscommunication, Pumbaa ends up being their leader, And when Timon goes to rescue them, he ends up becoming a sacrifice to a volcano.
Right.
This all ends poorly for pretty much everyone involved, but they escape with their lives at the end of the day.
There you go.
Yeah.
And they manage to escape with their lives because the big reveal towards the end that we are both eye-rolling at right now.
Well, first they use a little Samba escape. So they dipped back into the Lion King once again and used that. They rehashed that plot to get away from the hyenas.
Right.
Where they threw the luau party. This time they do a Samba.
So they do this little Samba bit. And then at the very end, we have all of these racist-looking tribe people who take off their masks and reveal themselves to be African-Americans.
And
or Canadians
people.
they're
dark-skinned people.
Or they're black people, and they are on this island, and they make comments about the fact that this was some type of a tourist thing for them to go do.
Called Be a Native Weekend. And if they leave early, they lose their deposit. And it was just kind of like, ay, 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 I don't know. This seems in poor taste.
It was uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I get it as like a nod back to the old, I think back to like Bugs Bunny when he's in like the tropics or like somewhere in Africa, or they had that like the classic kind of panning across the, you know, the continent of Africa where they hit the Congo and everything just like blacks out. Like there's nothing. It's the heart of darkness kind of thing.
Right.
Where they're panning through the jungle and all kinds of crazy stuff is happening. Like that kind of racist shit you can get away with back in like the 50s. To have a nod back to that and then that's your out.
Your reveal?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not doing too well.
I wonder if they originally were all like white people and they were like, oh, this Be a Native Weekend, we're going to lose our deposit, Stanley. Like, oof. And then some Standards and Practices was like, that's probably a little too much. Maybe we should literally change the skin tone of some of these people so it's at least just confusing and not straight up racist.
Oh, God. Yeah, this is
it was weird.
There were a couple fun moments that were in this, like the whole, hey, Pumbaa, why don't you put on this sarong? What's sarong? Nothing's so wrong. What's the matter with you? Like some of these classic jokes, they never die. So it was just
anybody laughing?
Like,
is anybody just real quick check? Is anybody at home?
You know, they were. I can't do a good Timon impression.
Sure. Okay.
But I enjoyed them. There were moments where like Timon's like gotta be brave, gotta be strong, gotta be kidding me. Like when he comes across Pumbaa, like you know, in like his throne.
I thought you were singing like. Gotta be strong, gotta be tough, gotta stick together.
Ooh.
Whatever that song is.
Get into it, man. Yeah.
I can't remember
I like
the rest
it.
Of it or who it's by or what it is.
No.
That's from the 80s.
Yeah. Or the 90s?
All I know. Love will find a way.
Okay.
Done.
Guys, we are ditching this podcast and we are starting a podcast that is dedicated to songs that are on Dave's mind from the 80s and 90s that we're going to go back and explore the gritty details of how they were produced.
It's just going to be mumbling and muttering through poorly remembered lyrics that only cover 17% of a song.
Not even 17%. It's called Dave Does Music. Can't wait.
DDM coming at you. So, real quick, can you explain why Pumbaa all of a sudden has like storm conjuring magic in this episode?
No, okay, so that's my final bit for this, is that they ask him to summon fire at some point, and
there's like a ritual fire that goes out, and they're like, you're the king, you need to start this fire up again, or we're gonna have problems.
Right, so they bring this like cauldron in front of him.
It looked like a bowl of Sterno.
Yeah, right. So they bring this bowl of Sterno in front of him, and they're like, you have to light this on fire, and fucking Warthog gets possessed.
Yeah, he's got fire eyes. He's got a cloud, like a ring cloud around him,
like a doom cloud that he just has. That looks like he's about to like summon something from like another plane, and then the fire magically starts.
I think it was like a lightning. I think lightning struck the bowl, and then fire caught. Yeah.
But even Pumbaa is just like, huh?
I didn't
know I could do that.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy. And then immediately there's like a rainstorm that happens after it that douses this fire out and puts it out, and in a moment's time they're like, it's in a snap, they're immediately called imposters. I was like, did you not see him summon storm clouds and harness the power of lightning in order to set ablaze
like
this this fucking bowl of Sterno? Like, how did you not? I don't know. It was impressive, but it was kind of confusing. But I think that that's probably it for Bora Bora.
Yeah, what about Saskatchewan, Ketchikan?
Oh, man, let's talk about, you mean Super Thick Squirrel? That's what I'm calling this. Yeah,
that's going to go up on our Instagram page, by the way. We will post a picture of this lady squirrel with the word thick.
Thick. I'm going to have some fun with this one, needless to say. Yep. This is more of a slapstick sort of episode
more
that they
of?
Have.
Jesus, it's the whole show is
very slapstick. Where they're trying to get this this delicious beetle that
they
is there.
All the way to Canada for it.
Oh, yeah, they for some reason they're in the Saskatchewan province of Canada looking for this fucking beetle, and Timon is the only one that's able to obviously get up into a tree. He's falling down. He's doing acrobatics at this point. He's coming really close, and then this fucking squirrel, this flying squirrel, gets in his way, and he like tumbles down to the ground. At this point, they indicate that there is another squirrel that's there, and it turns out the lady squirrel. And it turns out lady squirrel's objective is to get male squirrel that's up there.
These nuts.
Because that's truthfully what she is looking for. She is looking for him in a romantic fashion. And so they set up and they trap male squirrel, and then they lie to him that he's going to this dinner.
Right.
He gets to this dinner. They bring out like female thick squirrel, and male squirrel is just enamored mm-hmm. with her.
Full
he
on
is
Looney Tunes wolf.
Woo!
Wolf sees a hot lady. Pepe Le Pew sees a.
He's got
cat.
That like.
Yeah.
He's got the lump in his throat that's just going like up and down. Like, ooh, he is like real into what's about to happen. And I mean, to the point where like thick female squirrel just like carries him like off.
Now here's the thing: the original plan was supposed to be that if Timon and Pumbaa get this girl a date, land this squirrel for her to take home. She was then going to get a whole bunch of beetles for them to eat for dinner because these guys haven't eaten in God knows how long.
Yeah, they're starving.
Yeah, but meanwhile, they can like cook up a whole meal of nuts for the squirrels, which is fine, but they need to eat the beetles themselves.
It's in a macadamia sauce.
Okay. But then at the end of this whole thing, those two go off into the sunset after Timon kind of has like this weird aside about how he's a bachelor and he doesn't think that romance is a real thing and that relationship shouldn't exist and you should just stay a bachelor forever. I was just like, all right, man, again, we got it. Like, you had this whole thing in The Lion King. We get it. But you just blew the spot. Like, you ruined everything.
It's really confusing on multiple levels. One, as we talked about, this is an arranged
marriage.
Sort of date. Yeah, marriage. Yeah. This is an arranged date that they put together that could not have gone better in TNP's favor.
Yeah.
All right?
Everything worked out perfectly.
It worked out perfectly. It worked out perfectly because the squirrels, as we find out, this male squirrel, this French-Canadian male squirrel is just like, you know what? He's like, not only does he like it thick, but he's like, you know what? I'm tired of flying around and frivolously going wherever I want to. Like, I've met you, and like, now I want that person by my side. And like, that's kind of a beautiful message.
Yeah.
That's really,
between
you know.
Between two weird squirrels.
Between two squirrels. Between like a beta squirrel and like a real thick squirrel.
You think
squirrel.
He was a beta squirrel though? He looked flying around, doing whatever he wanted.
Dude looked real carefree and beta, buddy.
You think he was beta though?
Yeah, probably. And so they're going through all this stuff, and then suddenly Timon, just like out of nowhere, is just like, nah, that's fucked up, man. Like, you don't need women. You don't need anybody else. As his best friend is like his life partner is standing next to him, probably thinking, you'd be a pretty good meal if I ate you right now.
Yeah.
But it's just like totally dissing the idea of romance and being together with somebody and having feelings for shit. And it's just like, what?
I'm assuming that'll play out over the course of this terrible show's terrible 39 episodes, and he'll like learn a lesson and whatever. But like in the moment, you're gonna.
No, this went
starving.
On for 3 seasons, Dave.
God damn it.
This is 3 seasons. This is 96 to 99, man.
Speaking of three things that are terrible, what three cartoon creatures do you think this French Canadian beta squirrel, as you describe him, were a combination of? I thought of three distinct characters that came to mind. We got to mention that this squirrel is flying around just going like, la, 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 just like flying around like Captain Underpants, just screaming out that for whatever
just
reason.
Just ridiculousness. What did you think?
Over and over again. All right. So first, like Rocky the Flying Squirrel.
Sure.
Obviously. Mighty Mouse, because he's always got to like announce when he's going to jump into action. Always has to have a little sing song. We get it, Mighty Mouse. And Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, okay.
He was like a weird combination of those three for me.
Okay, so something that's exactly along the same lines as what we saw, a flying squirrel.
Yeah.
I
actually
was
the secret squirrel, and that was 100% wrong.
Oh. what was the second one that you had? Mighty Mouse. Yeah. Mighty Mouse, you know, a big kind of grand entrance, and then a sexual predator.
Pretty much.
To round out the mix.
Pretty much. And especially going back to like the Looney Tunes days. I think it kind of tied it in. But for me, overall, these two episodes, it's just like, I don't care. I don't want to know what they're doing. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like how they're going about it, and I don't like how it ends.
So what did you score this?
Two.
Two?
Yeah, one for each.
All right. I gave this originally a 5, sure. But because, again, that female squirrel was so thick, I gave it a 6.
Thick for six. All right, we're going to get to the most, I don't know what to do with this
section. I almost want to point, though, because I keep saying, like, at one point, Thick Squirrel walks past the table, and, like, they flaunt her squirrel boobs
no
in a way that
though.
Is uncomfortable.
No butthole. So. Not even
a little
acorn.
Oh, jeez.
Nothing.
All right. So.
How Disney was it?
All right, so guys,
how Disney was it?
Final category. We're getting into this. So this is just our subjective feeling of how we felt this fit into our larger idea that we have of Disney in general. So starting with Quack Pack, how are you feeling about how Disney Quack Pack is?
You know, I liked it because it put a spin on a Disney classic going all the way back to the 60s, which they've kind of reinvented themselves every decade, more or less. But it's also self-referential, and it definitely plays into the 90s tropes for good and bad, because it's also kind of like an update that I don't think anybody asked for.
Yeah,
so I like the idea of it, but the fact that it was like Disney's like, we got this thing, we don't quite know what to do with it, but the 90s are extreme. So I gave it an 8 out of 10 for how Disney it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
It felt very Disney to me to be like, we've got this property, let's make a thing out of it and jam it into the 90s.
Okay.
Like, this feels pretty Disney to me.
Okay, so I gave this 2 points for having... no, hold on. I'm going to count up.
Oh, Christ. All right.
I'm going to count up, buddy. Because I had Donald and Daisy.
Right.
I gave it a 3rd point because I really love the idea of Ludwig being brought back into a larger design. I gave 1 point for the nephews, and then I gave one little... tip of the hat for the Pluto. I gave this a 5.
Okay, a 5.
I felt that this was something I feel like with Disney personally, I feel like Disney really doesn't sometimes execute on something unless they have a really good plan with it.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, this was something that nobody was asking for, nobody really wanted, but they were just like, we can make that sweet, sweet Disney bucks out of it.
Yeah.
So 5.
So what's and your total out of 50 for this one? If you got to total it up, with my point change, I give this one a 35 out of 50, which I think is pretty good. The C minus for this is probably pretty close in line with what was going on IMDb. I could be 100% wrong because I'm just trying to do that from memory. I think most of these are around like the high sixes, early sevens.
Let me take. I give this a 29 as a total.
Yikes! That's a failing grade. This has a 6.9 rating on Quack Pack, so I'm close, which means I'm right. Sean's wrong, but that's fine. We'll deal with it later. What'd you give it?
Sounds like a fucking threat. Let's get into Timon and Pumbaa.
Welcome to the show, my brother Andrew. Sean calls him Andy. Just here to threaten Sean's
Jesus
life.
Jesus Christ. Great.
We're going to get into it on
all right.
Timon and Pumbaa here. This looks rough. This number that I'm looking at as my total looks too low, and I need to recalibrate because it seems wrong. But go ahead. What do you got?
I enjoyed how Disney this was. I enjoyed the fact that the theme song, I know that you will disagree with this, it was a nice segue into me getting in the mood in terms of how much I love The Lion King and how much I love these two characters. I'm excited to see these characters. It's very slapstick. It's very kind of silly, but it's nice to kind of see, you have them as supporting characters, obviously, in the movie. Now you have a chance to kind of see some of their... some evolving jokes and continuation of what they do and sort of the travel and the relationship that they have. I will say it's a little bit disturbing to kind of have Timon just be like, you don't need anybody. Like, I'm just going to be by myself as a bachelor forever. So with that, I gave it a 6, but wait, because of Thick Squirrel, I gave it a 7.
Damn it.
Yep.
For me, look, when this comes to Disney capitalizing on an already successful property, excuse me, it's a 10 out of 10. When it comes to delivering new and fresh ideas that are actually interesting and something I'd like to watch again in the future, it's a 0. So I'm going to average the 2 together and get a 5.
Okay. It's not terrible.
What's your total, though? Because my total is rough.
Your total's low because it's rough. Yours is bad because you gave a 1 to the theme song. I had a 36.
Okay, so that was on par with more or less what I had in the other one. I have a 19.
Ooh.
Which I'll tell you what, the IMDb score for Timon and Pumbaa is a 7.1, so I'm way off the mark on this one. But it just wasn't for me, man. It felt like a cash grab. I didn't like what they were doing with the characters that I liked, with the property that I really like. And it didn't offer me anything new. So
okay,
I'm going to stick with that. We're going to tally these all up at the end of the month, by the way. Average them out. So if Sean likes something a lot more than I do, or vice versa, it doesn't really matter because we're going to average these out. And then we'll see kind of what our ranking is at the end of the month.
Right.
Unless I decide to use math to sabotage it. And then redacted.
Oh, man. And if you have point totals that you'd like to share with us over Twitter, please feel free, or Facebook, please let us know and please post them up there. We'd love to see what your total was and how you felt this was integrated and panned out into the Disney universe itself.
And these are fluid, too. Yeah, if you guys can really convince us one way or another, we can change them. We can add a point here or there. We usually like to make amends where we're like, okay, you convinced me, so one way or the other, minus or plus 1 point.
Yeah, you got to get that spite point in there.
Yeah, spite points are great.
For a one or for a plus one or a minus one.
We usually don't do that when it's just Sean and myself, but when we have other people on the show, spite points tend to flow freely.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, hopefully we've got some guests coming up in a couple of weeks, so it should be interesting. But we say this because, you listeners, we love to get your opinions. Guess what? Turns out, you guys have a lot of opinions, and so to honor some of these opinions, we are going to turn this over to longtime listener and friend of the show, Bobby Anthem, for this week's Love It or Hate It. Bobby, take it away with this week's Love It or Hate It for Quack Pack.
This Love It was written by The Little Songbird on August 18th, 2012. The review is titled, A Very Underrated Show, Well Worth Checking Out. She said, the concept was interesting. Different in allowing the cute and rascally Huey, Dewey, and Louie of the old Disney cartoons and DuckTales to age, but one that did have potential to work. Is Quack Pack as good as DuckTales? In terms of consistency, maybe not. Is it worth watching? I absolutely think it is. Quack Pack is fun and very underrated in my opinion. Perfect it isn't, with some of the slapsticky scenes a little overly silly and some instances where something happens and it happens for no reason or doesn't make much sense. But the good far outweighed the bad. The animation is bright and colorful and is suitably fluid also. The music is very catchy, with the instrumental writing really quite electric. The writing manages to be witty and intelligent, and above all, very smart. And the story ideas are crisply paced and mostly interesting. The voice acting is great. There are some very talented voice actors here who really give their all. Overall, underrated and very smart show. Not one of Disney's very finest, but one that deserves more attention. 9 out of 10, Bethany Cox. And our Hate It was written by Cam Iacono on September 1st, 2017. Who rated the show 1 out of 10 and titled the review, Thank God for DuckTales 17. It says, well, this is pretty bad. I'm just glad that the Duck Nephews got a second wind in DuckTales 17. I know it's not supposed to be viewed as an actual reboot, just a spinoff sequel, but it's pretty bad. Huey, Dewey, and Louie were arguably bland characters in DuckTales, but that doesn't mean they weren't charming and likable. Here, however, they aren't at all. The design for Huey, Dewey, and Louie looks so forced to look like cooler versions of their past selves, not to mention, they all have the same personality. The cool bad boy archetype that was a thing in the mid-90s, I guess. One thing I hate is that very often they visit Ludwig von Drake, He's a good character, but he only serves a purpose as the sisters from Johnny Test served for their inventions to be used for plot devices. I always hated things like that. If you're going to call it Quack Pack, the Quack Pack, do something unique and adventurous, not slap another character on there for the sake of having something to base episodes on. The intro is pretty lame, too. It doesn't have the same catchy vibe as the other intros did, though, in the later Disney afternoon shows. Like this, the shows began to stagnate. Donald is enjoyable. I constantly rooted for him because he has to put up with the triplets crap all the time, as well as Ludwig von Drake.
What's our love it or hate it now for TNP?
This Love It was written by Seth Nelson on September 4th, 2006. Seth rated the show 10 out of 10 and titled his review Hakuna Matata again. He said, because of the trend that was being formed for all the Disney afternoon cartoons back in the day, I was hoping for a Lion King cartoon to come out. And it did. The cartoon was called Timon and Pumbaa, created in 1995 and shown on the Disney afternoon for a couple of years then, like with The Little Mermaid and Aladdin. More adventures had sprung up for the main characters, those being Timon the Meerkat and Pumbaa the Warthog, aka Mr. Pig. I liked all the new characters and the new enemies. They were so funny, and there were some episodes that had only the hyenas or Rafiki, and those were good too. Man, this show is the classic. And our hate it is titled Sigh, written by Killick Sama on December 2nd, 2003. It says, this wasn't one of the best Disney cartoons. I miss their old classics like DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, Tailspin, and Chippendale Rescue Rangers. Timon and Pumbaa was somewhat a kiddie version of Ren and Stimpy, still with the farting and belching. The show became repetitive when Timon and Pumbaa's archenemy, Quint, would arrive. Yeah, I didn't like Quint, and he wasn't funny. Neither was that bear that was featured on the Toon Disney version. The bear falling in love with the human irked me. Some of the Timon and Pumbaa cartoons were tolerable. I'm just tired of them running into Quint.
Is it me, or does Bobby sound pained when he's reading these?
I try to pick ones that are, they have it together, but some of them are just so bad.
You just got to find another Dudas review.
I do need to find a Dudas review. There's one guy who's just like, every sentence ended with four or five exclamation points. And then he's like, that's why I got into reviewing cartoons. And I was like, I'm not going to give this to Bobby. He's going to blow his throat out.
He is blasting off into the stratosphere.
Thanks. Let's hope he stays there.
Oh,
not Bobby.
No, not Bobby. Of course not Bobby. Unless we're animating Bobby as a rocket ship.
Oh, man.
Guys, we're trying to get Bobby Anthem animated this year. 2018 is the year we get Bobby Anthem.
I kind of want to put a brand new Patreon thing just for animated Bobby Anthem adventures. Like, that's it. I'm gonna do that. I'll do that.
All right,
that'll be our March right. Patreon bump.
Nice. Awesome, guys. We're now at the point where we are gonna give our reviews, whether we recommend this or whether we do not recommend this. And if we don't recommend it, we have the option to give it the dip. So Dave, how you feeling about Quack Pack?
Quack Pack, I will say, if you're a diehard DuckTales fan, I'll recommend it, at least checking it out. It's a different take. It's a different flavor. It might not be to everybody's appetites. That sounds weird. But I recommend at least checking it out. And then you can decide if you want to pass or not. It's serviceable. It's fine. They've got a lot of funny jokes. They've got a really good, talented voice acting team. And I like the animation and the kind of wackiness they do with it. So worth checking out. What about you?
Okay. I'm actually going to not recommend Quack Pack. Okay. It didn't hit the mark. There were moments of it that I wanted to have a larger or bigger payoff than it did. And they just really went with a Deus Ex Machina in the final seconds to make it easier.
Yo, you dipping it though?
I'm not dipping it. Okay. I'm not dipping it because of my love of DuckTales, the original and the reboot. This just felt like a lazy person's DuckTales.
Well, I mean, it was the 90s. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
The aesthetic.
So I'm not going to recommend it.
Gotcha.
Let's move on
to... Yeah, how do you feel about TNP?
TNP?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because you know, we talked about a lot of stuff tonight. I think I would give it the same Quack Pack recommendation that you gave for TNP. I'd say if you're really a fan of this, I'd say, you know, and a completionist, check it out. There's the music really brought me into it. The Timon dialogue where he's kind of discouraging people from finding love and happiness kind of really was a little bit off-putting for me. There's some fun slapstick that you probably know and love from these characters. I get the feeling, though, that after three seasons of this, it's a lot of the same. It's a lot of just repetitive stuff. And I'll have to say this, I'm really sorry, but those native tribes people that reveal, that just feels fucked up. And I don't know. I wonder if Disney has ever come out and actually said officially anything about it. They were probably just like, don't worry. Doubtful. There were no buttholes on those animals. So nope, we just kind of,
so we're clear.
Yeah. I'd recommend this if something, I would recommend this if you are a diehard Lion King fan. Otherwise, this might not be something that really kind of hits its mark. You might not be interested.
And that's where I'm stuck. Like, for me personally, I don't want to recommend it because it's just, if you align yourself with my taste, this is not something you're really going to enjoy. Which is weird because I love The Lion King. I love Timon and Pumbaa as characters in The Lion King. And I love the classic Looney Tunes. I just don't think this combination of things works for this show. But if you love all those things and really want to see Timon and Pumbaa in some new adventures and just expect like goofy kind of slapsticky wackiness, then yeah, it's something you should seek out. So, I'll give it a wet fart of a recommendation. Like,
wow,
you got to do it sometimes. It's not always pleasant. But once you do it, you know how to prevent it in the future.
We just need a soundboard for you from now on. It's just like, on the wet fart scale, Dave, what are you giving it? And you're like,
oof.
Leave it with that. It was more of an air horn toot, but
I don't know what that was. We need like a smell-o-vision scale. I don't know. For me personally, I can't really recommend it because I would not like to watch more of this. But I can see if your fans, like Sean mentioned, soft recommendation.
All right.
So hey. Soft, not thick.
So soft.
Just
like not soft, like that female squirrel. Not
like
all.
A beta recommendation. If you're into thick squirrels, 100% check it out.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Guys, this is the end of week 2 of our Disney March Madness. We got a lot more coming up over the next couple weeks. This is going to get challenging, isn't it?
How excited we are. There's better stuff coming up because Sean kind of waited it so that the more recognizable stuff, I think, is coming up later this month.
Well, I'll say this. The stuff that I'm really excited to talk about is coming towards the end of the month. Cool. And those are going to be some of those instantly recognizable Disney cartoons that you hopefully know and love.
Yeah.
So
I'm excited. If you're like, why didn't you guys talk about this yet? Hang in there.
Yeah. If you're like, why can't they reboot Bonkers for Dave? Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, maybe we'll start a Patreon for that. Nope. Or maybe we'll just end this podcast and do a whole podcast just that reviews Bonkers cartoons. Nope. Not doing that.
From and
all right.
Do they still have asylums?
Do they still have asylums? Mm-hmm. Soul asylums.
Damn it. This is a 90s throwback podcast.
I'm real proud of myself with that.
Yikes.
Oh, God. All right.
Hey, are you up to in the next couple of weeks?
Guys, as always, I do live improv comedy in Washington, D.C. with a group that is called Nox. That's spelled N-O-X exclamation point. We perform with Washington Improv Theater. You can find tickets and times witdc.org. And I'm always on the Instas and the Ters at Sean Paul Ellis because Dave hates it. Dave, what are you up to?
I'm up to the same old shit. You can find me on Twitter at DrClawMD, where I gripe about a lot of things. You can also find me on Collider.com, Nerdist.com, and DaveTrumbore.com. If you want to find out more about this little show right here and how we can get Bobby Anthem animated in 2018, head on over to patreon.com/SaturdayMorningCartoons. Remember, that's morning with a U. You can also follow along on Twitter at MorningTunes. Check out our website, SaturdayMorningCartoons.com. Keep up with Sean's handiwork and thick squirrels, no buttholes, on our Instagram page. Please hashtag everything thick squirrel, no butthole. Two separate hashtags. Let's get Disney excited. Keep these conversations going on Facebook and listen to our free audio podcast each and every week through YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. As always, we appreciate the thumbs up because we're getting hammered on the YouTubes, but we understand.
And be like William and Shannon and be super awesome. And send us cool emails, SaturdayMorningCartoons@gmail.com. I think that's going to wrap it up for round 2 out of 5 of Disney Madness. Any parting thoughts, bud?
I think the only parting thought that I have for this is that I was wrong. This is only a 4-week month. There's no fifth week
Silver
in this.
Silver lining, we're halfway through this.
Sorry, buddy. We're halfway through, but we've got 2 full weeks of exciting cartoons that are going to be coming up.
I like it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hakuna Matata, and we will see you next time.
Hey, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening to Saturday Morning Cartoons. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to transform and roll.